Would you like to open with a 3 to 5 minute opening statement?
Sounds good. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here. I'm usually on the other side of the table, so it feels really good to be sitting in this spot. But I'm actually just prepared some remarks here today, and I'll just try to get through those very quickly so we can get to your questions. But it's just an honor to be here with you as a former U of M alum and a graduate. I'm very excited about the potential of becoming a member of the Board of Regents at the University of Minnesota, and I very much welcome this opportunity to positively impact an institution which I believe is crucial to the economic growth and the quality of life here in our state of Minnesota. It was Margaret Mead who said, "We are now at a point in which we must educate our children in what no one knew yesterday, and prepare our schools for what no one even knows yet." And this statement is exciting, to be sure, but it also poses tremendous challenges for universities across the country, and the University of Minnesota is no different. The strength of the mission and the power of the impact of a good education remains as strong as ever, and in fact, the power to change lives, to change our state, and to change the world is one of those things that I think is stronger today than it ever has been before. Now, I'm proud to say that I am a product of the University of Minnesota, but it's not just me who's a product of the University of Minnesota. It's also my 6 brothers. We have between us 44 years of educational study at the University of Minnesota. When you combine our undergraduate degrees, our graduate degrees, medical degrees, law degrees, and postdoc work. So we are a University of Minnesota family, and we have been part of your family, of the university's family, for decades. My uncle, in fact, taught at the dental school at the University of Minnesota as well after he got his degree. So we're gophers. We are truly gophers. The university, don't tell the Bulldogs that, by the way. The university has embarked on a new strategy, and I've been reading a lot about the strategy, but that strategy recognizes both an excellence in education while at the same time tackling these new frontiers as the university strives for this transformation, which will ensure that extraordinary education, breakthrough research, and continuing this history of a dynamic outreach opportunity and outreach program as the university seeks to be the top 3 public research facilities in the world, which I think is an absolutely fantastic and attainable goal. The Board of Regents is key to keeping the university on that path. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I spent most of my childhood growing up on a farm near a small town called Lonsdale, which was a suburb of a big metropolis named New Prague, a town of about 3,500 people. Growing up on a farm and spending most of my time in a small town life was a great opportunity for me, but it also gave me the chance to get to know the university even as a small child. We spent a lot of time during the 70s and the 80s. Everybody knows what was going on the farms throughout our country and actually here in the state. And we used the Extension Service quite a bit. We used the Extension Service to help us out when we needed some help. We used the Extension Service to make sure we were on the right path and in making sure that we were our farm was as good as it could be. And we got to know our extension agents very, very well. And because of that positive experience, I knew when I was growing up, as did, as you can see, most of my siblings, that the University of Minnesota was the place that I wanted to go when I had the chance to get my education, and I did. I graduated from New Prague High School. I earned a degree in geography and a minor in Russian from the University of Minnesota. And then at that point, I was able to secure an opportunity for a research assistantship at Minnesota State University in Mankato. So I walked away for a little bit of time. I've started and owned and operated 3 small businesses. One of them was a real estate company, and I sold that. One of them was a real estate appraisal company where we did residential and agricultural property appraisals. And then I also started a company where we did organizational culture analysis, which we gave organizations an opportunity and a direction for some positive strategic change, organizations of all sizes. I've had numerous governing board experiences from the New Prague City Council, where I started, to Arlington Good Samaritan Nursing Home Board, to the 21st Century Foundation with the National Council of State Governments. And aside from that, I've had the opportunity to work in a very complex and large organization called the Minnesota House of Representatives, where I served for 8 years. While I served there, I've been assistant minority leader, assistant majority leader. It was great to see the opportunity and to see the institution from both the majority and the minority, because it does open your eyes quite a bit. Juggling competing interests in a competitive political environment is a unique experience that prepares me well for membership to the Minnesota Board of University of Minnesota Board of Regents. I'm experienced at juggling varied personalities, varying issues, politics, finances, and short and long-term strategies in a fast-moving environment. And I think that will allow me to hit the ground running and have a positive impact from the start. Serving in challenging budget times has also given me a appreciation, I think, for creative thinkers, an appreciation for people who look at things from all angles, willing to give new ideas a chance, and willing to make and stand with those tough calls. So I understand the role of the Board of Regents very well. I think my leadership styles are suited for the Board of Regents. My leadership strength is in recognizing the talents of others, fitting them together, and leveraging it to the best advantage of the whole. I think in terms of the role of the Board of Regents, I think Governor Elmer Anderson said it best. Now I'm actually going to quote to you what he said. While financial stewardship of the institution is part of the regent's job, it's far from the whole. The Board of Regents should recognize that one of its main roles is not just internal, but external. It's in helping the university interpret the activities of the people of the state, and especially to the legislature. It's in presenting a unified voice, attesting to the importance of building towards greatness. My father always told me that education is to a person what fertilizer is to soil. And I think the University of Minnesota, which helps ensure that students have the greatest opportunity for success, is exactly where I want to be and exactly the institution that I want to spend my time with. Ensuring the strength and success of the University of Minnesota in teaching, in research, and in outreach is critical to the success of our state. I want to use my experience, my creative thinking, my loyalty and commitment to the University of Minnesota, and my background to further the University of Minnesota's mission. So I thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I look forward to your questions, and I look forward to making sure that I am not just a gopher from the outside, a gopher in the past, but a gopher in the future.
All right, thank you very much. Yes. Billy,
yeah.
And Paul.
Yeah, thank you for your statement. I've got a little test of the creative thinking, I guess.
Yes, ma'am.
We all applaud the idea of the University of Minnesota becoming one of the great research institutions of the world. And then we come up against the reality and the reality check, in that if that's going to happen, we have to solve some huge problems, finance being one, perhaps a redefinition of how the universities functions, what it will do and what it decides not to do, what it's going to hand off to other institutions in the state. If you've been thinking about this, then you must have come face-to-face with some of these essential problems. You don't need solutions, but how would you, as a member of the Board of Regents, go about thinking about them? What's the framework? Where
sure.
would you start?
Well, I'll tell you, the framework, first of all, would be that I would need to dig in, get a very good handle on where the money is, where the money has been spent, and how that relates to the mission and the activities of the organization. So first of all, I would assess the situation. Secondly, from there, I think oftentimes in organizations of any sort that have been around for any length of time, you have some mission creep. And so what you need to do is step back, look at the ultimate goal, look at the strategies that you've put in place to achieve that goal, and then look at what you're doing and what you're not doing and its relevance to those goals and those strategies. And so sometimes you have to not just look at what you did yesterday, but what you need to do to make sure that you're fulfilling the mission of either the organization or the goals that were set forth by the organization. So in terms of creative thinking, I would say that I'm never bound by what we used to do. And it's not that what you used to do is wrong. It's just that maybe what you used to do doesn't make sense going forward. And so that's I think, the biggest thing is you got to assess the situation, the lay of the land on the ground, and see how things fit with the goal. Now, one example in terms of budgeting, it's difficult right now. We all know that. And whether you're a business, whether you're a public institution, whether you're a nonprofit organization, whether you're government, the money is hard to come by, which means that every dollar that you have to spend needs to be spent to best advantage that organization or the mission of that organization. And that's where making sure that the dollars are being spent, not just spent, but being spent well is a key component. You also have to get creative about how you think about what you're doing and where you get the money from. One example, now it didn't pass, but I'll give you an example of an idea that we put out on the table. One of the challenges is just consistency of funding in a lot of areas, and I know the university has faced that boomeranging of money going, being sent out and then being pulled back. That's hard to budget. It makes it very difficult. So you have to find other creative and more sustainable and more consistent places to get those dollars. And so one of the ideas I had was one of the missions of the state of Minnesota is education. It's a constitutionally mandated requirement. I deem education not just to be lower education, but higher education as well. It's important to our economy, and it's important to the people of the state, and it's important to our quality of life. That, to me, is a core function of government. But running an airport maybe isn't. And so what I thought was creative thinking. I thought, you know what? We could actually look at long-term leasing our airport to garner $5 billion. We could use those $5 billion to put into a 21st century fund in which you could use and leverage those dollars for educational scholarships. Now, I'm not saying that privatizing the airport or something like that is the best idea in the world, but what it showed is just the ability to think about things in a little different way and focus on the mission critical issues, and I think education is one of them.
Okay. Okay. Paul Thatcher.
I was focusing on Billy's question, too, and I was going to preface it by saying that your enthusiasm is not only commendable, it's infectious. But if you go back to your opening statement there and what you say about what do we call that program, Billy?
The
commitment to excellence, or what is that?
Oh,
with the
focus.
What do we call that? You referenced it in your...
The strategic positioning or the excellence in education?
The strategic.
Okay, sure.
Great research.
No, the strategic.
You have to look through it. I'm trying to figure out which
yeah,
part of it.
And I am too.
Okay.
Your comment about the research and so on.
Oh yeah,
call that,
yeah.
That's where you applauded it and said it's attainable. I don't know anybody that doesn't agree it's commendable and so on. I've never met any other person except you that says that it's attainable. And I assume that there must have been some thought that got you there that beyond enthusiasm, and maybe you could share that with us.
Well, first of all, I do believe that the University of Minnesota and Minnesota in general is well positioned to be a worldwide force, and especially in the biosciences, especially in the areas of when you look at our economy, we have a niche economy that leverages the University of Minnesota's good qualities, I think, very well. And so I tend to think that if we put our mind to it, anything is attainable, first of all, in my view.
Good for you.
Secondly, I don't think you put a goal out that you don't think you can at least get toward. And I think that that's what's important about making sure that those goals are deemed to be attainable as opposed to just things that are out there on a shelf. I think too often we put out reports that sit on a shelf and they're all nice and they're fluffy, but then we don't necessarily seek and press to attain the goals that are set forth. And so I do think that things are attainable, and I do think that Minnesota is strategically positioned in the right place for an economy of the future, and that's where I think that we shine.
All right. Yes, Jennifer.
We're really concerned. There is one area that, in terms of the future, is going to shift quite a bit for all of us, which is the demographic shifts in the state of Minnesota. Can you be pretty specific? I feel like you're comfortable with the documents and strategic repositioning the university has gone through. But there's also a reimagining document that frames out diversity and equity. If you know about the document, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on it. But secondly, just overall, how will you as a regent ensure that our equity framework of the university and specific goals are met?
Well, I don't have that document. I haven't read fully the reimagining document. But I do agree, and I think it's important, and I actually think it's part of the public purpose of the university, that both the faculty and the students have a sense of diversity within. And I also think that part of the public purpose is ensuring that, you know, the university is not just about teaching. It's about expanding imagination. It's about reaching out. It's about pulling people into an education that maybe they never thought they could have. And that, I think, is what differentiates a public purpose university or a public university in some senses from another university that might just be a school. It might just be a place of learning, but it's not a place that is demanding or being demanded of in terms of the outreach. So I do think that the diversity piece of it is part of the purpose of the university, of the public university in general, in terms of the outreach component. I'm certainly happy to take a look at the reimagining document. I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to look at that one of them. But in any case, expanding diversity is important. And again, it's not just important from the side of the students or the faculty. It's all of it. It's a holistic and a diverse approach. And again, it's not just a local diversity either. And I think that is an important component as well. Local diversity, obviously, is very important, but diversity of thought from a more worldwide basis. We've got students coming in from other countries. You bring diversity of thought, diversity of experience that is different than even a local diversity as well. And so I think reaching out, recognizing what the university has done. And before I make judgment on what we should do, I would need to have a better sense of what we've done, what the university has done. And then from there, you can strategically advance going forward. But I do think that the diversity piece is a core component of the public purpose.
Okay, Margaret.
Yeah, you mentioned in your opening remarks that you have done some work on organizational cultural analysis. This is a two- or a three-part question, and I'm glad you brought your pen. You scored high with me to begin with because I love multiple questions. One, do you have any idea how you would assess the University of Minnesota today in that area? What are areas you think they could work on? And the third, maybe the most important, from your background in that area, what are the type of questions that you would throw out at committee meetings, maybe not the board meeting as a whole, that you would push the organization to look at that area?
All right.
In 2 minutes or less.
No, she can do it. So the challenge is remembering the question. No.
I brought a pen.
That's exactly right. You know, when I go into an organization, what I do is, first of all, we don't look at the organization from the surface. What we do is we go in and we actually talk to the employees. Because I think you can learn more from the talking to the people on the ground than you can from leadership, to tell you the truth. And that's what our strategy is. We go in, we assess the employees, we ask them a heck of a lot of questions about their organization, their perception of their organization, and, by the way, the perception that they have of the commitment that the organization has to them. And then we're able to provide what I call is quantify water cooler talk. You quantify what's going on underneath the layers. You give the information to leaders, to the leadership structure, and they're able to determine which direction to go based on the information that employees probably would have never told them. And so that's kind of just to give you a sense of what we do. We actually, what I call, bring light bulb moments to leaders about their entire leadership structure. In terms of the organizational environment of the University of Minnesota and areas to work on, I think in any public entity, one of the challenges is operating the institution or operating the organization and doing so in a way that is open and transparent to the public. And what I mean by that is if you cannot tell the public what you're doing and what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it, and you don't have a very strong push in terms of the public sense of the organization, chances are you're not going to be able to sell the idea that either you need more money or that you need to change how you do things. So you need public engagement, and I think any organization can improve in terms of its public engagement and public face that they put on what I think in this case is a very important public purpose. The University of Minnesota is not just a school. It's not just a place that people learn. It's an institution that is critical to the success of our state, and I think that that combination is something that always can be improved. And that's not an indictment on what's going on. It's just a recognition that you can always do better, and you can always engage people in a different way. In terms of the type of questions that I typically ask, it's actually quite simple. They're all interrogative questions, and I generally ask the question, why? Why do we do what we do? Why do we do what we've done, or why are we doing what we've done? And what is it that we could do that maybe we haven't done in the past that might transform our future? And so to me, the questions are actually quite simple. They're not all that difficult to ask, and it really boils down to the question, why? And too often, we don't actually understand why we do what we do and why we should or should not.
Yes, Paul.
35 years ago, I was in Beijing with then Governor Anderson, and I asked him why he wanted to go to China. He said, well, I want to go do a piece of business at the University of Beijing. And so we went over there and had an appropriate conversation, and as a result of that and his intention, the University of Minnesota today has the largest population of Chinese students outside of mainland China. Many of our this is the kind of challenge that we have. Many of our citizens are angry at us for educating our competition. What do you say to them about that? And then I'll tell you what Governor Anderson said then about it.
Well, you know what I think what you often see is when students come to this country. They come to this, well, there's two ways I'll answer that. They come to this country, and oftentimes they stay and impact our economy in very strong ways. They have a lot of the grad students and undergrad students, they bring with them a knowledge and a different perspective that creates, whether it's a new patent or a new idea, and they don't take that back with them when they do leave. They leave that here in terms of the understanding and the impact. And secondly, you know, the ideas that are generated out of the University of Minnesota and commercialized provide jobs in so many ways for the people who live here. So even if those students choose to go back home, that education is not being fully sent overseas. The result and the impact of the of that education stays. And also, to tell you the truth, when you have education or people who come to this country, are educated in this country, understand this country, and choose to go back home, the interactions between our country and theirs down the road are strong, and they create a strong bind in terms of our economic sustainability and a pretty dynamic and competitive worldwide economy. So I think that there's a multiple reasons why that would be a good thing, and we shouldn't be angry about it.
I'll tell you, Governor Anderson sure. said at the moment that he was doing this. He said, Paul, half of them will stay, half of them will go home. The half that stay, every time they think of doing business in China, they'll call their pals that they went to school with at the University of Minnesota. Those that go back, as soon as they've got a piece of business to do, they'll call Minnesota. And so both ways we went.
He said it better than I.
And you said much of that in your answer. I wanted to hear before.
Well, I will tell you, I grew up in a household where we lived on a farm. We grew what we ate. You know, it was a pretty self-sustaining environment. But we had 8 exchange students. We had people from, students from other countries coming in and living with us, learning from them. I stay connected to them. In fact, last year, our exchange student from South Africa, who we hadn't heard from for 15 years, had no idea what happened to her, showed up here at the Capitol. because she was in the neighborhood at a cricket tournament in Jamaica. So even though we are sometimes so fully connected to our own environment, that an ability to reach beyond and have the connection beyond is so important. And whether it's Russia, South Africa, or China, all of those interactions, I think, have value in both directions. I think Governor had it right.
Okay, Bert.
Yes, and as a legislator, you had an opportunity to send money to the university. If you're a regent, you can even be looking for money. Do you feel the university is totally accountable to the legislator and to the citizens of Minnesota, and how can you improve that?
Well, I think absolutely the university is accountable or should be accountable to the people who fund it. And of course, the tax dollars are only a portion of the funding of the university, so that's only one piece. But I think it's an important piece. And I think the accountability and the relationship with both the public and the legislature is a very important part of the public face of the University of Minnesota. And so I think transparency, I think accountability, I think having measures in terms of performance are all good ways of both remaining accountable, but also expanding the reach of the university to a greater understanding both in the public and the legislature. I think that while some might be concerned about having legislators as part of a board of regents, I think that the experience within the legislature will actually help expand the footprint of the university in terms of having that reach into those people who make that very key decision. And keep in mind that legislators are not legislators here in Minnesota. We're citizens. We're citizen legislators. So even if you have a couple legislators who you say, do we really want to have a couple legislators, or do we really want to have a couple doctors or a couple lawyers? Well, as legislators, my experiences in my private life are very different than my experiences the experiences of the counterparts in their private life. So we all bring with us a little different perspective to the table, and I wouldn't be concerned about that component. And actually, in challenging budget times, I think that having people who've been involved in the legislative process would be an advantage, not a disadvantage.
Okay, Richard Newell, please.
Can you talk a little bit about the board itself with respect to the role of governance versus the role of management, and then talk about what makes up a successful board or a board that is having troubles? What are those attributes?
Yeah, the board from my perspective, this board is not like a legislature with a governor, in terms of the board and the president. It's a very different dynamic in that they both, in a political environment over here, we're sitting in the state capitol or the capital area, you've got a governor who runs the show, but at the same time you've got a legislature that has their own responsibilities. Within the Board of Regents, from my perspective, the goal is, with the president and the board, it's much more aligned. In that the both of them, whether it's the board or the president, they are both there to fulfill the mission of the University of Minnesota, and they should be doing so in conjunction with each other, not in conflict with each other. If you have a president or from the administrative side, if you have a president and it's the right person, you shouldn't be micromanaging what that person does if you believe that they're the right person. I think the Board of Regents supports the policy direction of the university. It shouldn't be micromanaging in the affairs of the university other than to set that direction. I'm trying to get the last part of your question. I'm sorry.
What attributes make a board really positive?
Oh, sure.
Or it could be negative.
Sure.
Answer the question.
I think boards that have people who are very clear on their mission, very clear on their role, and very clear in terms of their ability to work together. The issues that we deal with and that boards deal with are never personal. And when you have people who truly are there to fulfill the mission of the organization, they stay impersonal in a positive way. And so I think good boards work together. They differ. You shouldn't have, you don't need everybody to think alike on the board. In fact, that's not necessarily advantageous. But they should be able to differ with respect. Should be able to bring different ideas to the table. And one of the other key things is once a board makes a decision, the decision is made, and you move forward.
Well, one last question with that. Do you think the University of Minnesota Board of Regents ought to be more active with the legislature or not?
I think it probably depends on the issue. I think it probably depends on the issue, and it probably depends on the personalities. I view the president and the chair of the board as the public face of both the board and the university. If there's an opportunity and a need for the rest of the board members to reach out, I certainly think that that would be a possibility within the realm of the issue. I don't know that there's one good answer, yes or no. I think it probably depends on the situation.
Okay, Harriet Porter.
My question's been answered. Thank you.
George?
Ms. Brott, I was glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did I interrupt somebody? Did I start in the wrong place?
No, you're on.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. I thought maybe
it's okay. I've got you on the list.
Ms. Brott, I was glad to hear you say that you don't believe that this university should shrink from being a world-class university of excellence. Garrison Keillor said that maybe the university doesn't need to be as much a great university as it needs to be a good one. I disagree with him, and I hope that I think you do the same. But I would like to ask, what do you believe should be the role between the university president and the board, one of the most important positions of the regents, is to select a president. But then what is that relationship? How do you consider it?
I was trying to, in thinking about that relationship, and it's a dynamic that I probably need to get my arms around a little bit more. But, you know, it seems to me that the president is not here and the board is here. It doesn't seem to be that. It seems to be more of a situation where they're both trying to positively affect the goals of the organization and the mission of the organization. And the Board of Regents is a policy and a direction arm, as well as is the president. And so I think working in conjunction with the president is going to be key. Supporting the effort that is, or the ideas that are put forth by the president is also a key. But also holding the president accountable to the desires of the board and the desires of the university and the mission of the university is equally as important. So it's kind of a collaboration that has also a supervision component to it, but is not a hands-on micromanaging supervision from my perspective.
Do you think there should be at least a little bit of an arm's length relationship between the president so that the board can objectively evaluate the performance of the president?
Well, I think that the board should absolutely be able to objectively evaluate the performance of the president, and if they don't, who will? So,
all right, David Fisher.
Yes, over here.
I'm sorry.
Ms. Brode, I've tried to analyze for myself what my expectations are as we go through these interviews, and I'm really looking for responses to three elements, and I'll elaborate a bit. One is skill sets that would lend itself to the needs of the University of Minnesota and the Board of Regents. Ideas, that is, what specifically would a candidate want to do or accomplish as a regent? That is, why are you applying for this job? And third is the commitment, and being here in itself is a commitment, I understand. You said in your application that you are known as someone who challenges the status quo. So I'm, in the context of that remark I just made, why do you want to be a regent?
You know, first of all, I truly believe in that the University of Minnesota is a critical institution in Minnesota. I believe that fully. I came through it. I want to make sure that it is as good of an institution as I believe Minnesota deserves and should require. And so why do I want to be a member of the Board of Regents? Well, I do think that my skills and my abilities are very well suited to very quickly make a positive impact as a regent for the entire University of Minnesota. I have an understanding of the university from my time as a student. I have an understanding of the university through my understanding of its importance in both our economy and our cultural life here in the state. And I have a strong understanding of the importance of the university and the need for the university to expand its footprint in terms of its the view of this place as a very important part of our fabric of the state, and I think the legislative experience will help me do that. So the Board of Regents is in a good position right now, whether it's the strategic positioning document itself or just the sense that the Board of Regents truly is going to transform and increase, I think, the understanding of the role of the university in the entire state. And I think that my ability to both bring new ideas to the table, whether it's funding ideas, whether it's ideas related to how you focus your mission, whether it's ideas related to, making sure that the agricultural piece of the University of Minnesota stays strong, whether it's ideas related to ensuring that the public purpose part of the University of Minnesota's mission is continuing to move forward in terms of the public lens. I think that the legislative experience I bring to the table is strong. I think that my creative thinking that I will bring to the table will help dissect the challenges and the ideas in a different way. And the energy that I think I can bring to the Board of Regents in terms of the work, the hard work, I work. That's what I do. I love what I do. And I love the idea of making sure that this university can be as strong as possible and as advantaged as possible in terms of this worldwide economy. I tell you, this is not a small school. We are not a small state. We have the opportunity to make sure that this university is known worldwide, and I think you can do that. We have the opportunity to make sure that this university is drawing people from all cultures and all walks of life, and we have the opportunity to make sure that this university continues on the trajectory I think that its history would suggest it would or should.
Jim Erickson.
Ms. Raj, or Laura, if I may, and yep. I had the pleasure of working with you at the Capitol here while you were here. I think we believe that all 16 of the folks that are here at this table are highly qualified, you among them, to be on the Board of Regents. So we have to then start differentiating ourselves. So let me ask a couple of qualification questions and a differentiation question. I think you're the first of our interviewees, not the last, who is still in your productive career years.
That's harsh. Not toward me.
you're still young and doing a lot of things.
Yeah, thank you.
In contrast to three people we just had, one of them retired as recently as last week. So they're retired. With respect to your current professional endeavors, will you be able to give the time to this university that those who come here and are retired and clearly are willing and able to do so? So tell us about your willingness to do the time commitment, and then I have a second question.
Sure. Thank you very much. I was just teasing, by the way. I am absolutely fully committed and will give whatever time necessary, and by the way, more than that, to the Board of Regents. One of the things that I'm lucky that I'm able to do is have the time to commit to the things that I believe in. And if I decide to put my name in for the Board of Regents, which I did, that means that I'm fully committed to fulfilling the requirements, but also beyond the requirements. You know, I'm one of those people who kind of live what I do. And, you know, whether it's attending you know, a gymnastics meet, by the way, which we do at the University of Minnesota, or a hockey game, or whether it's just sitting down and thinking about where we can take the university, it's not about putting it in a box of 20 hours or 5 hours or 10 hours. It's about, one, getting the job done, and, two, putting things forward that will help the university. And I think, for me, as somebody who strives for excellence, I would not want to be a part of any organization didn't strive for that same excellence. And so I will commit whatever time I need to commit, and probably more.
And then secondly, with respect to differentiation, we could actually, I think by the numbers, forward 15 of the 16 names that are in front of us, but we're probably not going to do that. How would you distinguish yourself from, or differentiate yourself from the other candidates in the second district?
You know, first of all, I've got a great background and a great base of understanding for the university. I've got a lifelong commitment to the University of Minnesota. My family has had a lifelong commitment to the University of Minnesota. I grew up on a farm, but I'm not a farmer. I'm actually very like many of the 2nd Congressional District families. You know, there's a lot of us, and the area that I represented was an area that truly recognized the importance of the agricultural economy to the state of Minnesota. But most of the people in that area and in the 2nd District are actually not living on a farm, but you know what? Their hearts are still there. And actually, I'm a lot like that. So I do think that I represent the area very well in terms of the 2nd Congressional District. Also, my perspective. You know, I've been a small business owner. I was a stay-at-home mom. I'm an academic at heart. I have had experience in the legislative world. But at the same time, I did not want that experience to bind me in a way that didn't allow me to get out and weigh in and impact public policy in a different way, which is why I left after only 8 years. It's easy to just stay in the path and continuing doing what you're doing, but it's also probably more impactful to change it up, impact in different ways, and that's what I chose to do. So I do think that the legislative experience is strong. I think that my background with an entrepreneurial background, a agricultural background, not as a farmer, but as a member of an agricultural community, my family's commitment to the university, and just my own strong will and my own commitment to making sure that we keep University of Minnesota as one of the preeminent places for education beyond our borders.
Okay, Paul Thatcher, and then Lois.
Madam, yes. Both in your statement and in your response to questions, you have referred to your legislative background, and with good reason. During your incumbency in the legislature, there have been two members of the Board of Regents, Dean and Steve Hunter, who, Dean, of course, had been leader in the Senate on both sides of the aisle in a long and distinguished career. And Steve Hunter has been, for the last many years, the chief lobbyist for the FFL-CIO. During your incumbency, did you ever see any regents here acting as on behalf of the University of Minnesota? If so, which ones, and with what result?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. Absolutely. You know, I happen to I'm a rural neighbor, which means that you're within 10 miles of Dallas Bonesock.
Yeah.
And so Dallas was a family friend, and he was around the legislature. Talk to me about the needs of the university, the direction of the university, not just when he needed money, but in terms of what the university was doing. So Patty Simmons also is connected in a way that I think you know, gave her a opportunity to talk to legislatures, not just about money, but about the needs and the mission and the desires of the university and why it matters. And so, you know, just having the legislative experience is one component. But it's also, you know, when you're looking for the skills of somebody to serve on the Board of Regents, you know, whether it's a business owner, whether it's a legislative experience, I think you're looking for people who have had the experience in dynamic, complex, difficult, somewhat bureaucratic organizations. And that's just one avenue, I think, in terms of the experience. But, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit is another key component to making sure that you have good ideas on the table. Having that small business experience, I think, will be helpful as well, recognizing it's not just about complex big things. It's about how it hits the ground, too.
Okay. But my point was that I think you missed my point, and I'm sorry I may have been inarticulate. Dean, did he ever come talk to you or anyone you know about funding matters for the university? Or did Steve?
Yeah.
They did? Okay.
Yes. Yep.
All right. Then one last follow-on here. You spoke importantly to the new vision for the University of Minnesota and all of that, which is probably the crowning glory of Brunig's years. We now have it. You're president of the university. You seek to arrive there about the time that he's going to be installed. Is that still on the table? Is that at stand? Is it evaporated? Is that operative? What's the deal?
Well, I certainly think anytime you have a leadership change, that leader brings with them their experiences and their ideas, and that's a good thing.
So it may just go up in smoke.
Nope, but I don't think that generally a leader who tends to want to stay around for a while is going to absolutely obliterate anything that's been done in the past or do a full 180 on activities that have been funded and time that has been spent. And so I think it's about meshing the two. I think it's about making sure that you, a new leader comes in, recognizes what's been going on, makes the case as to why they might want to go in a different direction. And if they can't make that case, certainly, first of all, you probably hired the wrong person. And secondly, you know, you've got to mesh the two. You cannot, I don't think successfully you can have a long, sustainable relationship between a board and a leader or an executive, if it's a distrustful relationship where one just comes in and obliterates the activities of the other. So I think it's about meshing it.
Okay. Got to move on. Lois.
Please pardon me. I'm a little under the weather. And so I sound strange and I'm cold, and so that's why I sit here like I'm closed. But my question is, you've talked very, very well about your background that's Minnesota-based. You've also done some considerable work nationally, and it's been policy-based work. Talk with us a little bit about that policy work, if you would, please, and how it pertains to the way in which you would function as an individual, as a member of the Board of Regents, in sharing ideas and encouraging others to possibly think the way in which you might think those sorts of issues.
I'm trying to think of what specifically you're
National
connected to.
Leaders,
sure, okay. I've been connected to, as a legislator, it's very easy to come in and just be a Minnesota legislator, and that's great. And there's a lot of people who do it well. I wanted to make sure that I had the opportunity to connect outside of my borders, because actually most issues are not one state-centric, and they also, you can learn from other people and other places. And so I very quickly started to participate with a couple of groups. One of them was called the National Conference, the Council of State Governments. The Council of State Governments is a national organization that represents legislators and legislatures across the country. I also started participating in the Midwest Legislative Conference. Over the past couple of years, I now serve as, up until December 31st, as the governing board member, as one of the governing board members for the Council of State Governments in their national office, and as an executive board member of the Midwest Legislative Conference. And so I have learned a lot from those experiences, because you engage with politicians and with public policy that is important in other parts of the country that maybe will come to Minnesota or has been in Minnesota. And so you have this collaboration of thought and ideas, which I think has helped me be a better local representative as well. One of the things that I've been able to do is work with a group called the 21st Century Foundation. And the 21st Century Foundation is an arm of the Council of State Governments. And what we do in the 21st Century Foundation is that we actually raise money to fund ideas related to solving problems across the country in the states in ways on issues that we think are going to become a big issue down the road. So what we're trying to do is build the understanding of issues before they actually hit the legislatures. And we're trying to make sure that the legislators have as much information about those issues that might be emerging issues, whether they're pension issues, whether they're fiscal issues, whether they're policy issues, and have that background ready for them to be able to address them. So one of the things that I've always tried to do is not just address the issues of the here and now, but look at things going forward, where an organization might be going, what challenges it might be facing, not just this year, in the next year, but in 5 years, in 10 years, and act on those. Another group that I participated in, and actually Paul Taylor was involved in as well, is that I was one of the four founding members of the 2020 caucus here in the state legislature. So the 2020 caucus, the purpose of it was not necessarily to come in and grab an issue and run with it. The purpose of it was really to shine a light on the issues of the future. And what we did is we started bringing in information and people to talk about issues related to long-term care, talk about issues related to pension. And even if we never grabbed that bill or had a bill that this group of legislators, bicameral, bipartisan, wanted to support, what we did is that we brought issues that were going to be important in the 21st century. We brought them to the table and made sure that that lens was a lens through which everybody looked at the issue. And long-term care was a great example of an issue that I worked very strongly with Paul Thiessen on the other side of the aisle. We both wanted to solve a problem. Generally speaking, both parties came at that problem from a different direction, but we were able to find a way to find common ground to be able to come together and actually put a piece of legislation out and try to drive it forward.
We got two more questions to get in before in the 5 minutes.
All right. Patrick.
I'm going to be as brief as possible. Do you think the university is serving the agricultural community, particularly egg producers, well today?
Well, I think the University of Minnesota has a long tradition of serving the agriculture economy. I'm not a producer, so I probably wouldn't be able to make the judgment on whether it's doing it well. I do know that the focus needs to continue on the agricultural economy piece of our mission, of the university's mission, because I think it's part of their public purpose. And certainly, as somebody who comes from agricultural roots, who represents and would represent an area that is strong in terms of agriculture, that would be something that I would pay very close attention to.
Okay, you heard it.
Yeah, my question really has to do with fiscal experience and your knowledge of the university budget. Clearly, you have a lot of experience in a lot of different areas, and legislative experience is very valuable. If you had to do a 30-second elevator speech telling me everything that you could about the university budget, what would you tell me today?
I would tell you it's big, it's difficult. my experience on fiscal issues is quite broad. I've actually taught at Mankato State University in public finance. So I understand how budgets are put together and how they work. I know that the university's budget is very complex. It's actually very similar, I think, to a small state budget in that it's got funds that are fungible and funds that are not fungible. It's got places where they have funds that are committed for a certain purpose, and it's really difficult to touch those things, which makes all of the challenges, the budget challenges, even greater for those other dollars. And so when you have a $3 billion budget and you have dollars coming in from such varied places, what I would tell you is that I would take the time and I would make the commitment to have a great understanding of how the budget works, where the money's coming from, how the money flows, where it needs to go, and what's movable and what's not. I've spent a lot of time on budgets in the legislature. I think the university budget probably is very similar in a different way. I'm a numbers person. Whether it's the tax side of things or the revenue side of things, you've got to truly sit down take it apart, understand it, and my commitment would be that I do that.
Thank you.
Okay. 2-minute closing statement, if you would.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. I really am looking forward to the chance to positively impact the University of Minnesota in a way that I believe I've positively impacted the state as a legislator, as a business owner, and as a mom. I think I bring a perspective to the table that is unique. I think I bring an experience to the table that is advantageous, and I think I bring an energy to the table that will help move the university forward, that will help focus on the mission, and that will start asking the question why, and making sure that we're getting the answer why not or why we should continue. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.